What's up, Oos? Main event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
At just before 7 o'clock on an ordinary weekday morning, people in Hainaut thought they were witnessing an accident because a van had crashed into a house. A man lay injured in the road, neighbours came out in dressing gowns, someone ran to help, someone else called for an ambulance, and then the driver stepped out. He looked confused, disorientated, and he asked where he was. Seconds later, he pulled a sword from his trousers. What followed lasted just 22 minutes. But in that time, a quiet London suburb was turned into a crime scene stretching across streets, gardens and family homes. A teenage boy walking to school was attacked in broad daylight. Paramedics were forced to retreat. Police officers ran toward a man armed with a 3-foot blade. By the time it was over, one child was dead. 4 others were seriously injured, and an entire community was left trying to understand how a normal morning ended in unimaginable violence. I'm Emma Kenny. Welcome to Bang to Rights, the deep dive crime podcast, which takes you through some of the most heinous crimes the world has ever seen. Hi guys, thank you for joining me. Today's case is absolutely heartbreaking and devastating on every single level, and it just reminds you that even when you believe that you are safe, sometimes these extraordinarily terrible things can happen. No matter where you are, what you are doing, in broad daylight, these horrors can play out. And in this case, it's so sad because a teenage boy who deserved his future had it stolen. Let's talk about the 30th of April. It's around 6:50 a.m. in the morning in 2024. Residents near Lane Court in Hainaut, northeast London, they're basically awakened because of these really terrifying loud screams. And it turns out that a grey Ford Transit van's crashed into a house. And when they crashed into the house, they've also hit a 30-year-old pedestrian in their path. Neighbours are stunned. And even though this is horrific to view, what they are believing is that this is a road traffic accident. So they immediately rush over to help the driver and, of course, the injured party. Now, the driver emerges from that car in a yellow orange hoodie, looking really disorientated and reportedly asked, "Where am I?" But then, to the horror of those people genuinely trying to help, this particular individual draws a long blade. In fact, it's described by witnesses as a samurai sword. He takes it from his trousers and then he lunges at the man who's already been hit by the van. The injured man is at this point literally flung into a garden by the impact. Then the driver slashes the man's neck with the sword. Incredibly, and by maybe some divine intervention, he manages to survive. A local woman who's actually witnessed the crash, she heroically tries to intervene, but then she realises that the driver who's caused the incident has pulled out this huge blade and she runs away because understandably she's terrified for her life. When she is running away, she sprints past a 14-year-old schoolboy, a boy called Daniel Anderin. He's just walking to school in his PE kit, and she just tells him to run. But just like so many teenagers these days, Daniel is wearing headphones, so likely he couldn't hear her. And often children and young people, they are aware of their surroundings, but at the same time, they feel kind of awkward about interactions and this adult's running past you, saying something to you when you've got your earphones on. Even if you hear them saying, run, the chances are you're going to think to yourself, maybe this person's just got some issues, and because of that awkwardness and that lack of wanting to engage with an adult in that situation, you just put your head down, you move forward. You don't think that something terrible is going to play out in the next moments. But because of that, because he doesn't run, the driver gets to him, catches up to where he is, swings the sword at 14-year-old Daniel's neck and just causes a massive slash wound. And if that isn't horrific enough, he then stabs him in the chest. Now, a few brave witnesses, they run to Daniel's aid. This is once the driver's moved on and they're just trying desperately to help him. James Fernando, who's a local resident, said that as Daniel literally turned round, he struck on the face and basically the neck. And he said that he felt that he was dead on the spot. And he even said, it was so traumatizing that I can't stop seeing the boy's face, which is 100% understandable. Imagine that scene. Imagine witnessing a child being murdered. They're just walking to school in their PE kit. And then they've been attacked so brutally that as far as those bystanders are concerned, there was nothing they could do to save him. Now, don't get me wrong, they tried. He and others applied pressure to Daniel's wounds with towels, but his injuries were fatal. When the ambulance crew arrives in response to the 999 calls, they are greeted by the driver of the vehicle, who's now armed, and they're actually attacked. He swings the sword at them. He forces the paramedics to retreat. And the really sad thing about that is that that stops Daniel receiving immediate medical assistance at the scene. He is later airlifted to hospital, but at this point, he's simply pronounced dead. There was absolutely nothing that anyone could have done. And like I said, this is just a child walking to school, just going about his business, and now he's dead. Now, the Metropolitan Police, they received first calls about the attack around 7 a.m. And with respect to them, they had police on the scene very quickly within 12 minutes. And two unarmed officers, they find the driver near the crash site and they see that at this point, he's still looming over Daniel's body. Bear in mind, he's now brandishing the now bloody sword and he actually is shouting at this point, is there anybody here who believes in God? Now, in spite of this scene unfolding in front of the officers, they're undeterred, they advance. Bear in mind, they've only got batons, they've got pepper spray, they've got tasers, but they've not got anything more powerful than that. Also, add to this that when somebody is in a particular type of mental state, some individuals can have almost superpower strength. So even a taser that would ordinarily take out an average human being, that can sometimes be quite redundant in these situations. But nonetheless, in spite of that, the officers go towards him. And then the driver lunges at PC Yasmin Meckham Whitefield, hits her in the arm, and with respect, that injury nearly severed her hand. She narrowly avoided another attack. She does manage to deploy CS spray in his face. That does briefly blind him, but now she's very badly injured. Amidst that chaos, people are obviously horrified about what's happening. So there is a lot of noise around this situation. Because of that, the attacker then breaks free, bolts, heads through back gardens toward Hainault Underground Station, because the only thing that is on this attacker's mind is escape. So he just goes for it. He doesn't want to get caught. This is not somebody who wants to take accountability for the horror that's just played out. And he's actually seen scaling fences, sprinting across garage roofs. He's bursting into at least...
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games as all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
One home as he tries to escape capture, and one of the officers was repeatedly yelling to members of the public, make sure your doors are locked, because clearly he's armed, he's dangerous, he's lethal. He's killed a 14-year-old boy already. He's almost taken the hand off a police officer. So he's going to have no issue whatsoever using the weapon against an unsuspecting household member who may have a door open. Now, unfortunately, in one house on New North Road, the attacker slips in through an open back door. It's one of the reasons why we always say, if you want to prevent crimes happening to you, always be vigilant about locking your doors and windows. You shouldn't have to do that. It's not about victim blaming. It's just a reality. Opportunists, criminals, will use that against you. Now, inside that home, he finds 35-year-old Henry de los Rios Palania and his wife, Cindy Arias. They're both asleep in bed. They've got their 4-year-old child. Imagine how terrifying that is. You wake up and there is a man with his huge machete sword just standing in your bedroom. You know you've got a 4-year-old child to protect. As a man, you know you've got a wife to protect. You're not armed. This person is clearly dangerous. Just to come round to that, to wake up from your slumber to this horrific scene in front of you. And then it gets even worse because that man attacks the couple with a sword. Now, Henry is just a hero beyond belief. He shields his wife, he shields his child. He ends up sustaining a really deep laceration to his arm and hand as he fights the intruder off, but he fights that intruder off. He loses a huge amount of blood. In fact, he suffers really serious hand injuries. Those hand injuries will require extensive surgery going forward. And understandably, the family actually hailed Henry as our hero, but I think we can all agree, Henry is a hero, full stop. Now, their lives were spared when the 4-year-old began crying in terror. And at that point, for whatever reason, the attacker hesitated and then flees the home. Now, officers finally managed to corner the attacker in a residential driveway on Thurlow Gardens. This is around 7:22 a.m. in the morning. There, Inspector Malloy Campbell confronts him, charging with his baton, but the attacker just goes for him, slashes his hand, inflicts a severe injury, again requiring surgery. How many people is this man attacking? And he's not afraid to cause serious injury. We know he's killed, but it seems like he's completely happy to kill again. At this point, officers deploy tasers. That does actually drop the attacker to the ground. He just tried to get up, but then fortunately, he is literally swarmed by a surge of backup officers. And the officer then shouts, "Suspect contained," and manages to disarm the man. That attacker was arrested exactly 22 minutes after the first emergency call. At least 20 officers were involved in that chase. And the destruction that played out in those 22 minutes is catastrophic on all levels. Bear in mind, we're talking about a 14-year-old boy, Daniel Anduin. Just this innocent 14-year-old kid in his PE kit walking to school. Daniel attended Bancroft School in Woodford Green. It's a gorgeous school. It's a really nice private school. And he'd been a student at Bancroft since the age of 7. It's one of those places that you know your child is going to get an excellent education at. And that school actually released a statement calling Daniel a true scholar. This kid was super bright. They also said he demonstrated commendable dedication to his academic pursuits. They said his positive nature and gentle character will leave a lasting impact on all of us. And his friends said, Daniel just loved life, but in particular, he loved sports and music. He was a massive Arsenal fan. He was also engaged in church activities with his family. And his parents said Daniel was a wonderful child, well-loved, hardworking. Daniel had an eldest brother. An eldest brother who will no longer get to watch his younger brother go through the first that he himself does. And that's something that's stolen from the entire family. And like I said, to bring it back into sharp focus, this was a child completely unrelated to the perpetrator just walking to school. The community was so blindsided and so devastated by his loss, they actually organised a candlelight vigil at the Hainault Underground Station car park. This was close to the crime scene. They wanted to honour Daniel's memory, and rightly so. In fact, on the 5th of May 2024, more than 300 people attended. Don't get me wrong, Daniel's immediate family didn't attend because when it comes down to it, they are going to be so traumatised that even though you can get support from community around you, the reality is for many people, grief just feels really private. They need to do it by themselves. In fact, a 17-year-old neighbour, Harris, told the press that literally hundreds gathered at that vigil. They said he was a kid that was never in any type of trouble. I'm not just saying that. He never did anything wrong. He focused on school. He got good grades. He went to church. He is an example, isn't he, of what we want for our children. Daniel literally exemplifies the dreams that all parents have for their child to feel part of a wider community in church, for a child to sustain themselves academically and succeed, for a child to be a good kid. Daniel was all of those things. Another thing that happened in testament to Daniel's memory is on the 4th of May 2024, Arsenal, his beloved football team, they projected Daniel's photo onto the big screen at Emirates Stadium before their home game. So fans were given an opportunity to just hold a moment of applause in the 14th minute of the match. It was a nod to his age. It was a nod to his meaning. It was a nod to his memory. There was a banner, in fact, that read RIP Daniel that was unfurled in the stands. And then, incredibly, because you guys are amazing, an online fundraiser for Daniel's family raised £120,000 within 3 days. In fact, over 7,000 people donated to help cover funeral expenses and life. Because when you lose a child like this, you don't know whether you're going to be able to work. You don't know how you'll continue. And even though money does not change what has happened, it can ease some of the burdens. The bills keep coming. They have no compassion for where you are grief-wise. And that money makes a difference, a small difference, but a difference nonetheless. And doesn't it just speak of how, when these things happen, it's almost impossible for us to compute to such a degree that we need to do something. Even if that's just donate £10 to that family, at least we did something. In statements through the Metropolitan Police, Daniel's parents, Grace and Ebenezer Angerin, said, "No family should ever have to go through what we are experiencing." And they vowed to honour Daniel's memory. They said they were going to do that through the love and happiness he brought. Daniel's funeral then took place later in May. Mourners all wore Arsenal shirts and bright colours because, yeah, they were there to mark his death. But equally, they were 100% there to celebrate this amazing young boy's life. But let's talk about the perpetrator who caused all of this misery. He's quickly identified as Marcus Aurelio Arduini Monzo. He was born on the 11th of April 1988 to a Brazilian father and a Spanish mother in a small village in Panama, Brazil. Monzo moved often in early adulthood, so he went to university in Brazil. He studied business. He briefly ran a retail business with his brother Eduardo. Then he moved to New Hampshire, USA. But in 2013, Monzo moves to Newham, East London. He works various...
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Jobs. He's a bartender, he's a delivery driver, he's a handyman worker. He also joined a local gym. He avidly practiced Brazilian jiu-jitsu. In fact, he won several medals in competitions. He was really good at it. And those who knew him said, listen, this guy was a really easygoing, friendly man. But the thing is that we all know on the surface, someone can seem totally friendly, totally nice. But beneath that surface, something is bubbling. And that's exactly what's going on with Monzo. His life is spiraling into paranoia, into delusion. And the reason for this is he had developed a really heavy drug habit. So apparently what started as casually smoking weed actually started to escalate to him smoking an estimated 100 pounds worth of weed a day. That is an astronomical amount of weed to be smoking. Also, he's experimenting with LSD and magic mushrooms, which is psilocybin. And don't get me wrong, I'm not going to lecture you guys. I'm sure that many of you have taken things like LSD, acid, and magic mushrooms. And for the most part, people can get a great deal of positive experiences from these things. But some people, particularly those, for example, who are prone to psychosis, can find themselves in some really difficult, dangerous, and problematic scenarios mental health-wise if they take hallucinogens. And if you have a predisposition for that, you're not aware until it's too late. Friends and family said that it's around this time where he's taking all of these drugs that they noticed a really dramatic change in his behaviour. So he grows fixated on spirituality, but also he gets very engaged in the area of conspiracy theories. So he's embracing New Age mysticism, he's practicing yoga and meditation, which are amazing things to do. Many of you will understand that yoga and meditation can make a positive difference on every level to our mental health. But equally, if you become so fixated that it takes over your life, it's become an obsession as opposed to something useful. He even goes so far as to become a devotee of an Indian guru, even traveling to an ashram on a quest for enlightenment. Again, that's not something in the singular that would draw attention to anything problematic. Lots of people go on a quest for enlightenment. I myself have taken part in yoga and meditation and New Age mysticism. I too have met people that would be considered gurus and that people follow, because I think it's so important to expand your consciousness and understand who you are and feel insignificant and also hugely powerful as a human being. All of those things come into human consciousness and experience. But again, if it's not an obsession, it's not an issue, but it feels like this was becoming an obsession. Then in 2021, he attends a shamanic retreat in the Amazon rainforest. This is where he has a large amount of ayahuasca. Now, again, many people will talk about the benefits of ayahuasca. It's a very potent, natural drug. And people talk about meeting Mother Ayahuasca hallucinogenically when they're in that kind of trance through the drug. Many people talk about connecting with nature in a way they've never experienced, and many people talk about it being quite a violent drug where they get very sick before all of the positives come. But for the most part, people talk very positively about those experiences. However, like I said, if you have a predisposition to mental health issues such as psychosis, it can cause enormous problems. But I'm not throwing out the usefulness of hallucinogens, because let me tell you, some of the biggest universities in the world are using things like DMT and psilocybin and even ayahuasca to explore the impact it has on human consciousness, mental health in a positive way, and just connecting at a deeper level with the self. Again, it's all right as long as you don't have these conditions that can cause you problems. But unfortunately, it seems like Monzo has some kind of predisposition, because by 2023, at this point, he's become so fixated, so obsessed, he's starting to search for, quote, the magical, miraculous, and supernatural. He's drinking his own urine daily. He even bathes in it. Apparently, he believed it had healing properties. I do appreciate there are a cohort of people out there who genuinely believe that drinking your own urine is okay. For me, personally, I think it's coming out of your body for a reason. I really don't want to put it back in there. And even if I were to imagine that drinking my own urine was a positive thing, I'm going to draw the line at bathing in it. Because I don't know about you, it smells a little bit, doesn't it? Particularly if you've had something like asparagus. So maybe avoid doing things like that. But again, what is that telling you about his mental health level? It's telling you that he's become obsessive, fixated, and he's going to extremes. And that's usually indicative of something that's going on beneath the surface. If somebody is controlling their world in such a way, often it's because beneath the surface there is a lack of control and they're concerned about that. So they're trying to do things in an almost obsessive fashion. Also, he was attending breatharian festivals. Now, I am going to say where I am on breatharians. Breatharians apparently can live without food and can live without water, said no one in their right mind. I get it. They exist. I've heard of them. I've read about them. Breatharians, they've done interviews. They say, we don't eat, we don't drink. They just can live without food. And the idea that that is possible is ludicrous. You are a human being. You cannot survive on energy levels, which is what you try to say you're surviving on as a breatharian. The reality is breathing and being connected to the higher energy levels in our consciousness and in the world around us is going to leave you dead. Simple as that. You're going to be a non-breatharian. You're going to be a deadarian. But nonetheless, again, he's going to these extreme things to explore all of these new evolving ideas that, with respect, can cause more problems than they do good. Also, he was getting really into anti-medical ideas. Again, I don't think getting into anti-medical ideas is a terrible idea, because a lot of the time it means going for a more natural cohort of opportunities to heal yourself. But what I am saying is, when it comes down to things like breatharians, just it defies logic. Also, he did believe that the earth was flat. He also felt that 9/11 and the sinking of the Titanic were faked. And he also believed that the world is secretly ruled by shape-shifting lizard people led by the Pope. I don't know. maybe he's got some truth somewhere in that stuff. I don't know. For me, it does sound weird that anybody could have those ideas, but I do know really bright people who feel that that could be real. And I'm one of those people who says, I don't understand how I can text somebody in Australia and them get it straight away. That freaks me out. So with respect, who knows what's possible? I'm just saying, I don't have those particular points of view, but everyone is entitled to theirs. But when you put that in with all of the other things that I've told you, clearly he has some extreme perspectives that might speak of something underlying that's causing him issues. Now, Elizabeth Mananuku, this is somebody who hired Monzo for an odd job. She actually said that one of the things that she felt when she was around him was she was frightened of him because he had this real aggressive insistence on conspiracy claims. And I am somebody who likes a great conspiracy theory because often over time they become reality theories. But when it comes down to the very outlandish ones, such as for me, the Pope leading, shall we say, some kind of lizard people, that just seems really bizarre. But when it comes down to having somebody who's kind of pushing it on you, it can become really scary because you're looking at them and thinking, how can you think this way? How can you feel this way? And how can you think that I'm going to believe what you're saying is true? And clearly the fact that he is trying to desperately push it onto her suggests a rigid mindset. He has decided, and therefore that is the way it needs to be. And that's problematic because if people breach boundaries, they can be met with aggressive realities and actions through your desire to keep them on track with what you believe, as opposed to accept what they believe. And she must have felt that subtext of violence within his nature. And this is kind of all reflected in Monzo's social media. So on X, he did things like praising Adolf Hitler. I mean, when I think about going on X and posting things about inspirational characters, if you're not thinking, well, who can I think of? Oh, somebody who murdered pretty much 6 million Jews in a mass genocide and then actually was responsible for the death of 12 and a half million people, 275,000 individuals who were disabled on the euthanasia program. If I don't think about seeing them as some kind of a celebratory person, I don't know what I'm doing. I mean, come on. Anyone agreeing with what Adolf Hitler did is a terrifying human being. And his online activity is just literally peppered with far-right extremism and bizarre conspiracy memes. He also adored Andrew Tate. Now, don't get me wrong, there are lots of young people out there, particularly, who adore Andrew Tate, both girls and boys, and some of the things that he says make sense. Some of the things that he pushes make sense. But equally, there are some really dark things that he's talked about, particularly when it comes down to how women should be. So again, it's not necessarily healthy when somebody is looking at these kind of posts, when you think about the backdrop of what I've talked about so far regarding Monzo's behaviour. Now, on TikTok, Monzo went by Freaking Mark, and he described himself in his bio as a mystic musician, martial artist, Jedi, and ninja. Now, usually we'd look at that and kind of smile and go, oh, Jedi and ninja. But I genuinely think in this mindset, he believes that kind of.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Kind of stuff. He also posted videos of himself training with punching bags, and he genuinely became obsessed with samurai swords and with medieval weaponry, and people do collect that. We can all agree, people do collect these kind of things, but in the backdrop of what I'm talking about, this seems problematic and it seems to be escalating a mode of behaviour that he wants to go ahead and use against other people. And on his Pinterest account, he'd literally saved dozens of images of swords and knives. I am one of those people as well. If I had a friend and I was like, I'm just going to go on the Pinterest, maybe I can look at some interior design. Maybe they've got some ideas for a nice sideboard in my lounge. And I was like, oh, it's just samurai swords and really terrifying knives. I'd be like, we need to sit down and have a conversation. I get that some people are obsessed with collecting things because they just like that particular area of the world, an area of interest. But personally, I think when somebody has this kind of obsession around these things, it's usually telling a darker story. Also, when it comes down to the fact that he purchased several swords online in the weeks before the attack, it kind of plays into that escalation of what he wants to do. He literally spent hundreds on samurai-style blades, and virtually no oversight or background checks happen when people do that. So people can just go ahead and get these very dangerous items. They can say that they want them on the walls because they want them to look pretty. And I think to myself, do you actually need the real bladed article? Because you can get fake ones that look exactly the same. The difference is if somebody breaks into your home, you won't pull it off the wall and slice them in half or have that happen to you. Just throwing it out there. Now, one video that was recorded literally about 2 weeks before the attack, Monzo is filming himself doing an unboxing of a newly acquired sword. And he actually proclaims during that video to do ninja stuff. That's the intention. He's going to do ninja stuff. And the truth is he is. You're all going to have to take a deep breath when I tell you this new piece of information, because it's really harrowing and it's really telling, and it's talking of darkness within this man. It's the only way I can describe it. There is something deeply dark within this man, because he kills his own pet cat. This is shortly before the rampage he goes on, but he doesn't just kill his pet cat. Just put that into context. We're talking about an animal that you've brought into your home, an animal that you fed, an animal who's crawled upon you, that you stroked, an animal that's great for stress release. Cats and dogs are. So this is an animal that should have a strong bond with their owner and vice versa. He doesn't just kill this animal. He skins the cat. He debones the cat. Then he stores his pet cat's carcass in the back of his van. In fact, police also recovered a katana and a small tanto sword from his van and home. This is alongside the samurai sword that he actually used in the attack. And the belief is that they were used to do what I've just talked about. Now, before April 2024, it's worth noting that in spite of what I've just described regarding this spiraling of behaviour and this grotesqueness of the attack that was carried out on poor Daniel, and of course, even his own cat and all those who were injured when they were trying to aid what was happening in those moments, when we look at his background, it kind of stands out because there isn't one known to police. He literally has had extensive checks that have turned up no record of any prior incidents or any prior complaints involving him, no criminal history, wasn't on any watch lists. None of his victims that day had ever even met Monzo before. And when you think about, shall we say, acts of terrorism, so you think about the Manchester Arena bomb that happened just down the road from where I am, the horrible loss of life that happened there. When we look in the backgrounds of the man who actually blew himself up and those who helped to prepare what happened, there is such an extensive background when it comes down to being in places they shouldn't have been, training in camps they shouldn't have been attending, and so on and so forth. So you can kind of build a picture. This guy's got none of that. Now, as I've mentioned, it wasn't just poor Daniel who lost his life. It was also so many people who got injured, many of which were actually police officers. And Metropolitan Police really came out and praised the police response. They said it was an example of exemplary courage. Because bear in mind, PC Yasmin Meckham-Whitfield and Inspector Malloy Campbell, they both suffered really serious wounds. PC Meckham-Whitfield's left arm was literally nearly severed. Monzo's slash literally cut through to the bone. It caused really serious damage to her hand, to her wrist. And surgeons had to spend so many hours in surgery, basically putting her arm back together. And Commissioner Sir Mark Rowley said it was literally touch and go whether her hand could be saved, which is just traumatizing beyond belief. And footage of Monzo's arrest was literally publicized because Sir Mark Rowley wanted people to note the courage of police officers. At the end of the day, police officers are people. It's as simple as that. And it takes enormous steel and metal and courage to actually run towards danger. And that's what he said. He said, people say officers run toward danger. You actually see what that really looks like. You've got officers running towards someone who's waving a sword. He said, we owe them a debt of gratitude. And it's true, because other people could have and probably would have died had they not been willing to risk their own lives to save others. That sword was 3 feet long. Now, Rowley also acknowledged the trauma faced by the residents who'd witnessed that horrific attack and pledged the Met's mental health team would offer counselling to those affected, which is obviously desperately needed, because to witness a child being murdered and others being mutilated in this way on an ordinary street on an apparently ordinary morning, it just changes psychologically your sense of vulnerability. Everything that you thought you knew, it just dissipates. Your life transcends into a different area, and it takes years, sometimes a lifetime to manage those feelings. Now, when it came down to Monzo, obviously he's guilty. As far as I can see from the outside looking in, it's obvious. But on the 1st of May 2024, he's charged with murder of Daniel Angerin. He's also charged with two counts of attempted murder, two counts of GBH, aggravated burglary for the break-in and the attack on the family, and also possession of a bladed article. Yet on the 2nd of May 2025, at the pre-trial arraignment at the Old Bailey, Monzo pled not guilty to murder. He pled not guilty to attempted murder, not guilty to GBH, not guilty to burglary charges. He did plead guilty to the two weapons charges, but ironically, even though people knew he'd absolutely done what I've just stated, he said he was not guilty. So at this point, he remains at Belmarsh Prison's high security unit until trial. That trial took place at the Old Bailey in early June 2025. Judge Benathan actually presided over this case, and the prosecution was led by Bill Emlyn-Jones and Kirsty O'Connor. Now, the prosecution, they absolutely went for the jugular. They argued that Monzo carried out a deliberate, marauding attack on strangers, fully aware of his actions. They said he went ahead, he armed himself with swords, he went on a rampage of unprecedented violence in a normally peaceful street. The jury are then shown literal videos of the attack, bearing in mind that this guy is saying he's not guilty. Also, they argue as a prosecution that while Monzo may absolutely have been under the influence of drugs, therefore he may have been having some paranoid or psychotic delusions, he absolutely knew he was attacking human beings. He even tried to evade police. So this, as far as the prosecution is concerned, indicates awareness of wrongdoing. They also emphasise that Monzo's psychosis was self-induced. So he was using cannabis and drugs as a volunteer in that scenario. He wasn't being forced into it. And that means it does not absolve him of criminal liability. And that's absolutely correct. It's actually an aggravating factor, not a mitigating factor. He's choosing to put that into his body. And that's having a consequence that we see in his actions. Now, they bring in a forensic psychiatrist. And that forensic psychiatrist does testify that Monzo showed signs of cannabis-induced psychosis. But that's not a chronic mental health condition like schizophrenia, for example, which is a brain disease, essentially. So this forensic psychiatrist is basically telling the court this was a transient condition and it was triggered by the drug use, the intoxication psychosis, essentially. Now, the jury also heard from PC Meckham Whitfield. The jury was shown pictures of her injuries pre and post surgery. She has got horrendous injuries. You know, they're so severe. She's got deep trauma and she's had to have a series of operations that haven't actually fully restored use of her left arm. Bear in mind, she's a police officer. It's essential for her duty. And she actually listed to the court just numerous ways that her life has become poorer and the things that she's no longer able to enjoy because of the crime. Then they bring in Henry de los Rios Polania. He was the individual whose house was broken into, and over a year later, he's still waiting for further surgery on his hand. He suffers from severe anxiety, panic attacks. He's unable to return to work. And Sydney Arias, his wife, she was left with constant anxiety, constant stress. Her four-year-old child was present when this all played out. She can't sleep at night. Now, the defense, they say, listen, Monzo was in the grips of severe mental illness at the time. He had diminished responsibility. They're basically saying he didn't know what he was doing. He was out of his mind. They said that Monzo's dive into hallucinogenic drugs and conspiratorial beliefs, it had just culminated in this psychotic break, believing he was an assassin, apparently battling unseen forces. Now, the defense psychiatrists, they did testify that Monzo had suffered from delusions of persecution and grandeur, and they argued that he likely did not fully understand what he was doing was wrong. Then his brother, Eduardo, takes a stand as a defense witness, and he actually recounts how Monzo changed after this really heavy drug use. Apparently, he became very paranoid. He isolated himself from his family, became hyper-irrational. And Eduardo told the jurors that in the months before the attack, he was actually so concerned about his brother and the bizarre behaviour that he was exhibiting, for example, drinking his own urine, bathing in his own urine, that the family had tried to get him help, but Monzo just refused. He insisted he was fine. It's such a dichotomy for families psychologically and psychiatrically in these circumstances, because whilst you might be able to lead a horse to water, you genuinely cannot make it drink. And it's the same when it comes down to psychiatric and psychological services. So if somebody is presenting as competent to some degree, if they have some kind of understanding of a situation and a scenario, even if you take them to a psychiatrist and say, look, they're not rational, if they can appear competent, they will not be given help if they deny that they want it. So you're in a rock and a hard place as a family. They're doing their best to get him help. They see that things are spiraling, but they have no power. And isn't that horrible?
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Because if their wishes had been carried forward and he had been made to attend help, then maybe this wouldn't have played out. It wasn't hard for the court. On the 25th of June 2025, Monzo was found guilty on all major counts. So unanimously convicted of murder of Daniel Ondurim. Three counts of attempted murder, one count of wounding with intent, aggravated burglary, and also possession of article with a blade or point. When it came down to the sentencing that happened on the 27th of June 2025, he was sentenced in the historic and very famous Old Bailey in London, and Judge Benathan condemned Monzo's actions as wicked. He said, "A peaceful scene was devastated as members of the public were attacked, police officers were gravely injured, a couple were terrified in their own home, and a clever, talented, much-loved young boy was killed by a savage blow with a sword. You, Marcus Ardinu Monzo, did all of that." Then the victim impact statements arrived. Ebenezer Ondurim, Daniel's absolutely adoring dad, described the moments following the attack. He says he ran across the road to a hunched up body. It was his son's body. He said he didn't initially realise it was Daniel until he recognised his school sports clothing he was wearing. How do we even compute what his father went through? He runs to that scene, probably wanting to help. And not only does he realise that the victim can't be helped, he realises that the victim is his son, who he can no longer help. He talked about how Daniel was gifted. He'd been recently selected by his school to attend an excursion to the University of Cambridge because that was going to be his future. His dad said Daniel had so much potential to excel. No family should have to go through this. And he rightly said that he believes that Monzo is a danger to society. Apparently he's shown no remorse. He's not apologised for what he'd done. And let's just put it into context. If you were somebody who had carried out these attacks during delusions, when you'd had a psychotic break, the moment that you come to your senses, the moment you realise the horror that has unfolded because of your actions, the minute you realise what you have done, what you have cost other families, surely in that moment, you're going to say, "I'm so sorry. I didn't know what I was doing." You're going to stand there and take responsibility and accountability whilst also acknowledging that you didn't know what you were doing, but that you are deeply sorry for the actions that have caused the losses. He hasn't done that. Then another victim, Henry De Los Rios Polanyi, read out his victim impact statement. He said, "The day of the attack was one that changed my life." Said he was left with trauma that he never asked for. Said he's not just a victim, but a survivor, but he's having to learn how to live again. He isn't able to return to work. He's dealing with PTSD and panic attacks. That his world feels smaller, less secure. There's not a single day, he says, when he doesn't feel the impact of what happened. Inspector Molloy Campbell said in his own impact statement, which he bravely delivered by himself, dressed in his uniform, he told the court that the memory of the radio transmission on the day of the attack still makes him shiver. He said it wasn't normal police talk, but panic and fear. He describes remembering losing a huge amount of blood, said his hand now remains tender, it's easily hurt. But he addressed Monzo directly to say his actions have not and will not suppress the determination of him and his officers to maintain the high standards expected of them by the public. The judge intervened at this point to say that in his view, you can be incredibly proud. And I'm sure that every single one of us listening to this right now feels incredibly proud of those actions. Judge Benatham imposed a life sentence, said that there's going to be a minimum of 40 years served before even the possibility of parole. That means that Monzo's going to be in his late 70s by his earliest time of release. That's if he's ever released. And if he is released, he's going to remain on license for the rest of his life. The CPS released a statement after the verdict saying, "Monzo will spend most, if not all, of the rest of his life in prison, and that is only fitting for the wickedness of his actions." I'd love to know your thoughts on this. Do any of you feel a level of empathy and sympathy for Monzo because he was under the influence of drugs? Do you believe that he didn't know what he was doing? Or do you believe what the CPS, what the jury, what the prosecution say, which is that he did know because he tried to get away with it? He did know because he tried to, for example, get rid of the weapon and he tried to evade capture. Or do you feel that maybe it is possible he had a full psychotic break and within that full psychotic break, yes, it was drug-induced, but he genuinely didn't know what he was doing? Equally, if that's the case, then why wouldn't he apologise? Why wouldn't he show remorse? Is it possible that there was a predilection within him? That there was a almost predestined potential for him to go ahead and carry out these unspeakable actions given the right set of circumstances, the right activation factors? Is that actually what led to the horror that unfolded in this awful case? Poor Daniel. I think about him. I think about that kid, 14 years of age, all those possibilities, all that potential with his earphones in, just walking near home, near safety. And then out of the blue, extinguished, executed. The only thing I hope is that first strike was like a bolt out of the blue and then he was just in bliss. That there was no acknowledgement of what happened. Just death in an instant and bliss for an eternity. Take care, guys. Look after yourselves. I'll see you again next time. Be safe.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take 5 before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Less Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNCs apply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.